The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Apparently it's good for a World Cup if the host nation do well, so that's good news as Russia win again, essentially ending Egypt and Mo Salah's dream. Elsewhere, Colombia handle their way to defeat against Japan and Senegal become the first African team to win at the tournament. All that plus a look ahead to tomorrow's games, your questions, and that's today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. We have a panel today. John Bruin is here. The second pod of the tournament for you. How are you?
I'm good, yeah.
It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you too.
Barry Glendenning, not your second pod of
no,
the tournament.
I've done a few more.
Ram says Barry should record and sell his soothing Irish accented counting. Gently drifted me towards blissful sleep till he mucked it up with his enthusiastic 28. Stuart said I would love it if Barry slowly counting up was used in a lift of a tall building such as the Shard. And Matt says counting numbers is the most soothing thing I've ever heard. Barry could end wars if he got to triple figures. It's extraordinary that, I don't know how long I've worked with you now, sort of 4 years or even longer, really. This is the most praise I've ever heard you get, Barry.
Yeah, I've been doing this podcast for 10 years and it's by a country mile the most positive feedback I've ever had has been for counting. And I was thinking on my way in today, I walked in today, 6.2 miles.
Did you count all the way?
I didn't count all the way, but it occurred to me because I'd seen this positive feedback. I thought maybe I might start doing my own podcast just where I read a bedtime story and then count backwards from 100 and help people get off to sleep. I could do one, you know, one a day, just a short bedtime story, Brer Rabbit, something like that. And I think I could monetize it.
I think you could. Maybe, you know, try it. You could become a YouTube or an Instagram. You could become an influencer.
Yeah. The CBeebies might get in touch.
Look, I'm interested, and if there's any way I could be involved.
No.
Okay. Japan 2, Colombia 1, the first time Japan had won a World Cup game on European soil. Let's bring in Ben Mabley, the Japanese Gary Lineker, who is live from Osaka. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
We're very well, thanks. How was this result felt in Japan?
It was a very nice surprise, you know. Many pundits, myself included, were expecting Japan not to win any of the games in the group, and they've won the first one and probably the most difficult one. Of course, they got a bit of help from the very early red cards, but the new manager, Akio Nishino, has done an awful lot of experimentation in his three warm-up games, and he finally found something that sort of clicked in the second half of the last one against Paraguay. And it was a lot of those players who performed then who formed the basis of his starting 11 tonight. And yeah, in the first half, even against 10 men, they were under the cosh quite a lot. But in the second half, they went back to what worked against Paraguay. They started playing a bit more aggressively, a bit higher up the pitch. And the positive selection, the positive approach paid off for them. Of course, again, they were against 10 men. Colombia's energy level was clearly dropped in the second half. But, you know, no one was expecting this. They'll take the 3 points any way they can get them.
Ben, does the World Cup capture the public imagination in Japan sort of in the same way that it does here in Europe, in England, or wherever?
In the past, I would have said yes. But ahead of this one, there's been so much negativity because results and performances hadn't been good for a while. They changed the manager, as you know, just before the World Cup, and everyone thought, well, that was just a ridiculous thing to do at that time, and so there was no way Japan were going to be any good. And so it was a bit difficult to get a bit of public momentum, I suppose, behind this tournament. Now maybe that will change a little bit. You have, the sports bars are all full, and when Japan do well, you get hundreds of people out in the big crossroads, the crossing in Tokyo and Shibuya, all celebrating in the street for hours. So that's the kind of scenes we might see again now. It wasn't really looking like it was going to be that way this year because of all the negativity. Now suddenly things have changed.
So are you looking at the group now, plotting Japan's route through to the semi-finals or the quarter-finals?
I don't know about the semi-finals. I mean, the prospect of playing England as an Englishman living in Japan is quite enticing for the second round. I think Japan are still going to be wary of their other two group opponents, not that Poland-Senegal was a particularly high-quality game afterwards. But they'll be looking at those thinking, well, we've got a bit of momentum now. And that's really all they could ask for with such limited preparation. You know, you're supposed to have 3.5 years, 4 years in the Asian cycle to prepare for the World Cup. And by changing the makeup of the squad and the manager at the last minute, they've basically crammed everything into the last few weeks. And so it's a cliche, but they were kind of relying on momentum for something to go right and then to bring that into the next couple of games. And that's what they've got now. So, yeah, you never know.
Ben, there was a story doing the rounds that the Japanese supporters were cleaning up after themselves, you know, tidying up their litter before they left the ground today, as they customarily do, and that the Colombian fans saw what they were doing and sort of inquired, "What are you doing?" and were told, so they did it as well, which I thought was quite nice.
That's nice to hear. Yeah, if you ask a Japanese person or most match-going Japanese fans why they're doing that, I think the usual reaction would be, why wouldn't you do that? You know, you've come here, yes, you've paid your ticket price and everything, but what right do you have then to litter the stadium? And so it is a customary thing at pretty well every J-League game. You know, people stick around afterwards. They have carrier bags with them to put their litter in, and then they clean up the stands before they go. It works quite nicely. So it's nice to hear that the Colombian fans were looking at that and got involved as well.
I can't see it catching on in England somehow.
I don't think it will either.
Hey, Ben, thanks so much for coming on.
No, it's my pleasure. Lovely to speak to you.
Hopefully speak to you again soon. Ben Mabley out there, the face of the Premier League in Japan. This game, obviously, John, hinged on this red card. And you, I know it's instinctive, but Carlos Sanchez should just let the ball go in. And we're not even sure it was going in.
Rush of blood to the head is the phrase that comes to mind. There is something about footballers that just makes them want to handle the ball. Samuel Umtiti did it the other day, didn't he? I suppose the most amusing thing about that was the lengthy protests. A delegation led by Radamel Falcao to ask the referee to change the decision, considering the VAR. Well, good luck, lads. Really good luck. But the mistake itself, it's actually caused by Davinson Sanchez's complete loss of faculties as well. Colombia are much fancied going into this tournament, though I must say I saw quite a bit of them at the last World Cup, and the thing that stood out for me was that it was pretty much, aside from a couple of players in defence, pretty much the same team that I recalled, and they looked older. Mm. Apart from, I should say, James Rodriguez, who looked resplendent on the bench. He looks good.
He looks good, but he didn't look particularly fit. And actually, Davinson Sanchez is interesting because he has a mistake in him. I mean, everybody who took... You hear pundits talk about him and they say, oh, he's been brilliant for Tottenham this season. And he has been good for Tottenham this season. And he is young. But every time you see him play, you think he's going to make a mistake.
Yeah, there's something of the... There's a few defenders like that come to mind. You know, for 89 minutes of the game, we can look like a Rolls Royce, a real quality defender, and then the mistake happens. I suppose that's an accusation that we sometimes hear against somebody like John Stones. But that was a serious error, though I don't think it was as foolish as what Carlos Sanchez did himself. And that you just left Colombia, if you're pretty much playing the 90 minutes, and then they were a team that introducing players who were carrying injuries off the bench, and it was always going to be difficult for them, and Japan had those extra energy levels, as Ben was saying there.
That was the second fastest sending off in history, 2 minutes 56 seconds. The fastest was 1986, Jose Batista going through the back of Gordon Strachan when Scotland wore those brilliant shorts with the kind of, they were white shorts but had a blue stripe sort of across the middle, which has never been repeated, I don't believe.
Regarding Carlos Sanchez's red card, at what point in the game is it acceptable to handle the ball?
We see Suarez was right, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yes.
So what I reckon 72.
I would say 65.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's at 0-0. You think?
Nil-nil, 65, I'd do it.
I'm going to go 80 minutes.
Yeah.
80 minutes.
It's a long time. It's still a long time. You can get back into it. Colombia equalised with this free kick. It was a very clever free kick from Quintero, who I thought looked like a very good player. But I think the most angry I've been in the World Cup by the free kick that was, it was given, because it was Falcao had dived about a minute earlier. The ref hadn't given it. So then he just threw himself into someone else in a sort of pity free kick. In sort of peak refereeing, don't understand football, free kick that he gave. And it really frustrated me. Am I alone?
Yeah, I disagree. I think it was fair enough.
Really?
I don't necessarily think it should have been a free kick, but I can totally understand why it was given. Falco, very experienced, game the ref, I think. But was a stunning free kick. I thought, because he's been given immense credit, Quintero, for, you know, getting it under the wall and having the gumption to do that. But the accuracy, like, just, it was pinpoint accuracy. And if it had been, you know, an inch to the left, the keeper would have kept it out.
The Japanese goalkeeper, Kawashima, another one who challenged technology by trying to say that it didn't go over the line. It's like, good luck, mate.
I also thought the font of the Colombian player names is my favourite font. I didn't check what it is. It's kind of quite square, and I thought that was quite special.
Okay.
Maybe I won't make any more font observations during this tournament. Look, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll talk about Senegal, the first African side to win at this World Cup. Welcome to part two of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Poland 1, Senegal 2, the first African side to win in this tournament. I thought this game was pretty terrible, and both of you thought it was quite good, John.
Yeah, it's one of those games that you watch a World Cup and people like, it's just nice to see a load of mistakes and a bit of incident. I mean, let's face it, outside of a World Cup, you wouldn't watch Senegal, Poland. You wouldn't cross the street to watch it. But I actually thought it was a fantastic game.
Call yourself a football fan, John.
Well, I wouldn't watch it as an international friendly, let's put it that way. But I thought it was an interesting game. I have a little bit of interest because I've watched Poland a bit at championships over the last few years. And aside from Euro 2016, this is what they tend to do, which is fall apart a little bit. For that first goal, Piszczek makes the mistake. But the big players, those players that were for Dortmund for years ago, and Błaszczykowski, Lewandowski, Piszczek, all of them had terrible, terrible games. And Kukowiak, though he did score a header at the end of the game, channeled his Alan Pardew performances at West Brom and made that catastrophic error.
He was quite unlucky, though, wasn't he? Because the Senegal player, it's Niang, isn't it, is running on, has been waved onto the pitch while almost at the same point that he's making a horrendous back pass. And so the other defender doesn't know this. You know, it's just like throwing a player on in the middle of the game without telling anybody.
Yeah, the players who were commenting on UK TV all seemed to think it was unfair, the pundits. I thought it was fine. I thought it was fair enough, to be honest. You know, he was waved on by the ref. You made the point before that we started recording that refs don't play football, and that the pundits who were watching on the UK coverage all thought it was quite unfair. But it was sort of a perfect storm. You know, what are the odds that Niang gets waved on at the exact moment Krakowiak decides to play this really strange and unnecessary back pass from inside the Senegal half, hoist a big long pass back to his keeper, Niang, and the Bednarek who'd come on, him and Chesney, I think Bednarek didn't quite know what was going on. Chesney rushed out of his area to get the box, and Niang nyomed between them, kicked the ball ahead of him, and then had the straightforward task of just poking it into an empty net. But I think Poland very much have themselves to blame, and there was three separate individual errors that led to this goal, and Niang sort of made the most of the opportunity he was given. It was perhaps a little bit unfair, but I still think Krakowiak shouldn't have played the back pass in the first place.
But given Japan have won, and given that Colombia should hopefully have 11 men for longer than they had in the first game, I would think those two sides are more likely to progress, John?
I don't know. I think Senegal have actually showed that they had quite a lot about them. They've got some decent players. They took the chances well. I think they were the better team even before Poland essentially took, you know, cost themselves the game. I think, and not just because I got them in the office sweep, I fancy Senegal to go to perhaps be the best of the African teams in this tournament, which isn't saying a lot because they're actually the first team to win, of course. But I thought they were quite decent in that game.
Okay, Japan play Senegal next, and Colombia play Poland. Egypt 1, Russia 3. The greatest ever start for a host nation in World Cup history. Elliot Rothwell, who did our preview, English journalist based out in Russia, tweeted just after full time, "For anyone who covered any of Russia's pre-tournament games, none of this makes sense." He says, "No one thought they were capable of this. The move away from a back five has helped, but this is unbelievable. Part of it is that we all underestimated how bad Saudi Arabia and Egypt are, but some things have fallen into place." Your thoughts, John?
I'm just really glad for Vladimir Putin. That he's, you know, got to party like a Russian with Sepp Blatter, it is said this week. But I think it's fair to say that Russia have surprised everyone, not least, actually, I would say quite a lot of the Russian population. I'm told, actually, this game in St. Petersburg, there were more Egyptians there than Russians. So that suggests that the Russian public didn't quite have the faith in their team that they perhaps should have done. Because there have been some outstanding performances by Russians. Cherchesev, who scored again, is now joint top scorer with Cristiano Ronaldo. Zuba, well, I like these type of players.
Yeah, they're a throwback. James says, "In honour of Artem Zuba's gloriously simple goal, who is the greatest big man in football history? Or World Cup, if only topical suggestions are welcome. Personal favourite, the Czech Republic's Jan Koller."
Well, he's the player that I would have compared him to. Personal favourites from days gone by. He's like Mick Harford, one of the hardest player out there. And Kevin Francis. Remember Kevin Francis?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Just played for Stockport County, Birmingham City. 6'7". When Kev got on a run, he normally ran off the end of the pitch, actually. But a fantastic goal-scoring record.
To be fair to Juba, though, like the goal was brilliant. He took it down on his chest. He flicked it, maybe a tiny bit lucky, past the defender. And then his side-foot finish into the corner was excellent. Cheryshev's goal was a nice move and a nice finish. The own goal from Ahmed Fati, Barry, was... I mean, it was ridiculous. You couldn't do it if you tried.
I probably could, to be honest. But, when you're shanking an attempted clearance into your own net, basically, you know it's not going to be your day. But I think Egypt have been very disappointing, and I'm sure everyone is shocked at, you know, Russia's amazing energy levels, Russia coming good when a massive summer sporting event comes around. They seem to have a knack for that. And I applaud them, you know, for peaking at just the right time when expectations are so low. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how history will judge this Russian side, depending on how far they go into the competition.
Do you think that at a certain point we in this country we might try and follow the Russian model in the way that we've followed the Spanish model, the Clairefontaine at France and so on, after the successes they've had at this tournament? Just throwing it out there.
Well, they've only won two games, you know. Let's not go mad.
They scored as many goals in their first two games as Spain did in their entire tournament win in 2010.
Another country who,
I don't know what you guys are suggesting. Although it is interesting, Nick Harris from At Sporting Intel tweeting before the World Cup, FIFA breather, sigh of relief that their greatest ever parking the bus display has successfully been accomplished. 18 months of stalling a proper investigation into Russian football doping so they didn't have to kick the hosts out of their own tournament. Tweeted this morning, German TV named a Russian player as being embroiled in state-sponsored doping and a cover-up. His late withdrawal from the Russia World Cup squad last month. Interesting film, same old story. FIFA say ask WADA, who say ask FIFA. That's Nick Harris reporting on that. But they've played very well, Russia. And the winner of this group will face second place in the Spain-Portugal group. So that will be very interesting to see how they get on when they come up against a team of much higher quality than this group has.
Yeah, and I think we expect Uruguay to beat Saudi Arabia tomorrow. And then I don't know which of Spain or Portugal either team will want to play. So the final group games in this group, you would say, are pretty dead. At this point, when we're speaking, Egypt aren't actually out of the tournament, but I think they could be by sort of lunchtime tomorrow, really.
Yeah. And, well, in the next part, we will look ahead to that game and the ones involving Spain and Portugal. Welcome to part three of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. So Saudi Arabia play Uruguay tomorrow. As you mentioned briefly in the part two, John, you can't see. I mean, given how hopeless Saudi Arabia were, unless Russia are seriously brilliant, Uruguay should win this game.
Well, Russia are seriously brilliant. Dangerously brilliant at this point. But yes, Uruguay were workmanlike against a Salah-less Egypt, but you would expect them to get better for that performance. Maybe Suarez might look a little, can I say this, or me in particular say this, fitter, because he looked a little, is it overcooked or undercooked? I'm not sure, but he wasn't really firing in that game. I fully expect this to be a bit of a breeze, but because Saudi Arabia, still that performance in that opening game is the worst thus far.
It would be nice.
Sorry, just the thing about Suarez, because seasoned sort of La Liga watchers, and I didn't see a great deal of it last season, but said that nobody who has watched Barcelona play a lot last season should be surprised at Suarez's lethargy
and decline.
But I had a look, and he scored 32 goals last season. That's not a bad decline.
Well, I suppose that those seasoned La Liga watchers know what type of opposition he's facing week on week. And I suppose let us recall that Barca went unbeaten till very late on in the season. So, and he's the main goal scorer aside from Messi. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that the player that left Liverpool in 2014 and played so well for Barcelona the following season when they won the Champions League is not there anymore. That's as a result, probably, of him playing too much football over the years. He's one of those players that plays every game. Eventually, with every player, the engine pegs out a little bit, and that's what it looked like to me.
How many goals do you reckon I'd score for Barcelona in a season if I played 90 minutes every game?
I'm going to say none.
You think none?
Well, the thing is, Max, let me explain this.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure you would be on the same wavelength as the other players.
No, I understand that. But just by virtue of being, you know, being up there for every corner.
But would you not find yourself offside and things like that?
Not at a corner.
Okay, well, that's true. But Barcelona don't really do corners, do they?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many do you think you'd score?
Yeah, that's a better question.
I mean, I don't think I'd get many. But if I played every minute, okay?
Every minute of every game.
Up top.
Yeah.
I just think you'd be on the end of a, you know, like Messi would get through and then just square it.
I don't think he'd like you. asking you for the square pass, the 1-2 off him. I don't think you two would get on.
How many do you think you'd get? Answer the question.
Four.
How many did you think you would have got before I put you on the spot and you decided, oh, I better say four?
Oh, you know.
Good, you reckon know. 12 or 15,
yeah,
didn't
get
you?
To 20. Probably more importantly, it would be nice to see Suarez and Cavani linking up well, wouldn't it? Because you're sold that with Uruguay, that they've got these two wonderful centre-backs from Atletico and they've got these two wonderful centre-forwards. We haven't seen it. Well, Godin played very well, didn't he? And sort of carried the team through in the first game.
I think the problem in the first game is they had these young midfielders who are kind of new to the international setup, and they were very disappointing. And I don't know if that was big match nerves or... Well, they clearly are good enough if they're in the team. And I think, you know, the Uruguayan coach changed his attacking philosophy because he had these new, fresh young blood and... exciting young midfielders, but none of them delivered in that opening game, and that was a problem for them.
Group B, then, Portugal play Morocco, Iran play Spain. Portugal Morocco is more interesting a game or not?
More interesting than Iran Spain or of the day?
Well, I thought Spain, even though they drew against Portugal, they looked so good. And I just think Iran won, but won, were terrible and won. I just imagine Spain will annihilate them. I may be wrong.
Well, you mentioned before that they won the World Cup in 2010 without ever really putting anyone away. So I could see Spain winning that game by quite a narrow score. But in the other game, Portugal-Morocco, I think Ronaldo is probably tonight on his phone checking the golden boot, seeing what went on with Russia and thinking, now's time to fill my boots after. You know, he probably wants to get the golden boot in his bag by the end of the group stage, and this is one of those games for him.
See that?
What?
Do you see the same? Not that you see that fly flying around. Right.
I wonder if perhaps Ronaldo is not more interested in winning the golden boot than winning the actual tournament. Because he would see that as a more achievable goal and will want to, as John says, get it in the bag as early as possible. Morocco impressed, well, insofar as you can impress in such a terrible game. But I thought they weren't terrible. Or maybe, did I?
I don't think either of them were good. It was a long time ago now.
It is a long time ago. I'm getting just this big blur of... It's like attending a load of weddings. They all get mixed up. And it's one big wedding blur. And you can't... You know, some bride and groom, probably usually the bride, has put, you know, so much thought into her special day, this wedding. Everything has to be perfect. And then a load of drunk paddies turn up at it, and 2 hours after they go home, they can't remember it from the last wedding they were at or the one before that.
If, Barry, all the weddings you went to, I brought in all the brides and grooms, would you be able to match them up?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's quite impressive.
Definitely. I thought Morocco were okay in spite. I thought they were the better team against Iran, but still lost. And they were... people had touted them as perhaps the best team to come out of Africa, but with the most difficult draw. So they might give Portugal a game.
I think there's a difference with the way Portugal approach this game. It perhaps won't suit them as well as playing Spain did, because I suppose when you consider how that game went, it was on the counter that Portugal did most of their damage. Ronaldo was lightning quick throughout that game. I haven't seen him that quick for quite a few years, actually. But he had Gonçalo Guedes as company and Bernardo Silva. But you would expect Morocco are going to sit back much in the way that they did against Iran for much of that game. So it's going to be tougher for them to break down, you would suggest.
In Spain player news, Gerard Piqué, his involvement in the film, which Antoine Griezmann said he would stay at Atletico Madrid, the half-an-hour documentary where Griezmann said he wasn't going anywhere, has caused surprise and unease at the Nou Camp, everybody.
What was his involvement in the video? I haven't seen it.
Gerard Piqué's company produced the film.
Oh, okay.
Barca Vice President Jordi Mestre said the club would speak internally to Piqué. I mean, I presume that's speaking to Piqué, but, you know, they'll do it internally. It's slightly more painful, isn't it?
They should put out a video of the chat. His company could produce it.
They could, of the internal chat with Gerard Piqué. And Samuel Umtiti as well, who are both at the World Cup. In other news, FIFA will analyse England's failure to be awarded a penalty because of VAR. It's the first time that they're going to analyse something the VAR did or didn't do, the rugby tackles on Harry Kane.
So what, do they have... a panel of guys wearing full kit in a studio that are now going to analyse the other panel of guys who failed to properly analyse the thing the ref missed.
Is that like when you have your driving test and you have a driving test examiner examining the examiner, which actually happened to me once.
Oh, you're joking.
I failed, by the way. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that it seems to be that sort of that Russian doll experience where you can have a VAR person investigating the next VAR person and it carrying on forever, really.
So, sorry, you were doing your driving test.
Yes.
And you'd a bloke beside you with a high-vis jacket and a clipboard, or a yes. lady. And in the back,
there was a lady who was examining him. And when I had to do the reverse around the corner, she said, "Oh, I'll duck down." So, yes, I failed. I think, I got whatever the two, dangerous drive-ins in a, I completely panicked. It was
I wouldn't even have been able to start the car.
Being double-teamed in a driving test is not fair, is it, really? John, did you came in this afternoon and said, will we be talking about England at all? And I said, not really, unless you've got some amazing insight, and you had some reasonably interesting insight.
If I can recall what it was. My insight is this. For one reason or another, I haven't seen coverage of England in a major tournament, I think, since 2006. And I was quite shocked by the partisanship of the punditry on the TV. On the BBC, Gary Lineker, who was sort of chief cheerleader, it has to be said, when they showed that candid camera footage that they always have to show of them celebrating the goal, Gary was there with a pelvic thrust and giving it the large most of all. I noticed that Frank Lampard actually wrote down the goal scorer on a piece of paper when that goal went in. But I was really quite shocked because I didn't think that their examination of that game, compared to my judgment, of course, it has to be said, was not what I saw. I thought England, once they conceded the penalty, were actually quite panicky and a lot of things weren't coming off for them. I was surprised when the goal went in, but this was regarded as, one of England's great triumphs. And I do know that having looked at various YouTube clips of the day with people running naked through the streets of Preston, people going mental in Croydon Box Park.
I mean, if you put me into Croydon's Box Park, yes, I don't know why I do.
But maybe I'd forgotten what it was like, but I've really been quite taken aback by the reaction to that game.
We had a tweet yesterday. You were talking about mosquitoes on the pitch and the best thing to do is to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
And we forgot to do the joke, which was Jack Wilshere then should have definitely been picked for England, shouldn't he? Because he'd be smoking around and no mosquitoes or midges would be near him. Well, the news that has broken this evening is Jack Wilshere says he's going to leave Arsenal. This is on his Instagram. I can confirm that I will be leaving Arsenal Football Club when my contract expires at the end of June, following a number of extensive conversations with those at the club, and in particular a recent meeting with the new manager. I felt I was ultimately left with little choice but to make the decision that I have due to purely footballing reasons. As has widely been reported, I, along with my representative, have been in talks with the club for a number of months with the view to signing a new contract to extend my stay at the Emirates. My intention throughout these discussions has always been to remain an Arsenal player. I have been on the books at Arsenal for 17 years and have always felt part of the fabric of the club. Such was my desire to stay that I had in fact recently agreed to sign a financially reduced contract in order to commit my future to the club. It carries on. Do you want me to read all of it?
No.
Okay. Any thoughts?
Well, it would appear that Unai Emery clearly doesn't want him and has left him with made that clear in no uncertain terms to Jack, and away he'll go. I suppose it signals the beginning of the end for him, because he's hardly likely to find a club as mediocre as Arsenal that will want him.
Pick a shirt he'll be wearing next season. I'm going to say West Ham.
That was exactly the club that I had in mind. I'm sure David Sullivan has perhaps even spoken to his representative. I couldn't say that for certain, but that story has been around a little bit that Emery was not too impressed. I think what that goes back to is that Arsene Wenger had that very close relationship with Jack Wilshere, and almost years ago, you would almost see like a tear in the eye appear when he was asked to ever speak of Jack Wilshere, a favourite son, but one who, I won't say let him down, but one who never came through for him, perhaps in the way that he expected. And once Arsene Wenger went, it always looked to me as though Jack Wilshere wouldn't be at Arsenal for much longer than that.
This from Thomas. Considering the mockery made of the FIFA rankings by the game so far, me and my mate reckon an equal, if not better, job could be done by 3 to 4 blokes sat in a pub and given a few hours to put every team in the world in order over some pints. Do you agree?
Well, I do that most weekends, actually.
I think there's very little I couldn't do over a few pints in a pub.
You scored 20 for Barcelona.
Nah.
Tony says, if Fellaini shaved a divot on the top of his head and Courtois placed the ball on it, would anyone be able to stop him running up the pitch and scoring? And would this be against the laws of the game? I mean, I hope it wouldn't. I believe it is.
Wasn't there a Brazilian player whose his party piece was to run down the sideline with a... run down the pitch with the ball on his head?
Are you not thinking of Paddington Bear putting a rugby ball up his jumper and scoring a try?
Possibly. But no, there was a player that... I'm sure the listeners will be able to tell me. But there was a player who...
Paddington Bear doesn't wear a jumper. He wears a coat.
Okay. And he's, he's Peruvian. But
rugby ball under his hat.
I think he put it under his coat. In detective news, a person from the world said, "Is Barry is a maverick detective. I'm curious to know what kind of cop the other Podders would be. Jonathan Wilson would be a cerebral sort who alienates the proper detective men on the squad with his detached analytical manner. He eventually wins them over after cracking open a career case by decoding the literary clues left by a bookish serial killer. As he closes the case, however, he is disturbed to discover how much he has in common with the murderer he's been chasing." Portlander says, "Barney would spin riddles and metaphors in the Cumberbatch style and you'd have no indication that he was actually working anything out, and then he'd just solve it all at the last minute. You'd be left completely disbelieving that he was a real detective, but you'd keep watching because it's so nice hearing him talk."
I've just discovered the name of this guy.
Yeah?
Do you remember this guy? Curlon and his seal dribble. Curlon is a former Brazilian footballer. His trademark skill, named the Dribble de Foquina, or seal dribble, where the ball is bounced continuously on his forehead while running along. I'm sure that would have gone a bundle in League One. But he was that's the early days of YouTube. That was one of the first clips.
I presume
clips.
This was not the 1930s. That is more recent than
that's 2005, that
oh,
is.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. It's good to learn something, isn't it? Mm. Hey, that'll do for today. John, thanks so much for coming.
My pleasure.
Come again.
I would love to, yes.
Barry, it's so nice to see you.
And it's always a pleasure to see you too.
Well, I presume I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.